Chief Black Horse, you are the center of the universe. Welcome.
Pleasure to be with you again, Mercury.
Well, we're at a very inflection point in this country, it seems to me. We have witnessed something that's happened in L.A., which is a bit disturbing because of the extremity based on the reaction from the White House. I remember growing up as a child in the 60s and in college and so on, and even in the problems in Selma, Alabama, when they first black children went to school and they had the National Guard called out. And even then, it was just the National Guard, and everything went smoothly, and because there was no provocation from the White House. And it seems to me we are in a new era. We have this full moon. We're speaking on the full moon. And it just, it's astounding to me that we have been so misdirected from the real issues of what we have to deal with in this country is poverty, lack of education, the basic fundamentals. But that seems to be the weapon of choice for politics to proceed in their own power-hungry approach to maintaining the status quo from their perspective, not from the perspective of the people of this land. What is your take on what's going on?
Well, this is the same iteration and pattern that has existed in terms of colonized ways of being for millennia. Certainly, when the visitors or colonizers arrived here on the shores of Turtle Island in North America, the agenda was the same: domination, force, control, coercion. So this, there's really been no shift or pattern, shift to the pattern. And it's an agenda that is often predicated and engendered by fear and, you know, the way of living and being in the world, which has to do with being, you know, living fearlessly, which involves basically the embodiment of peace internally and externally, right? So when you live fearlessly, you're not paralyzed and blind by the people and the circumstances around you. But, you know, this is obviously an agenda that's predicated on myopia and the oppression and suppression and essentially extermination of people. So it's the same agenda of colonization and conquest. There's been no change in that action. And certainly the rhetoric of this current administration continues to reinforce that patterning.
You bring to mind the concept, and I've been shouting at the rooftops about the whole concept that there is no future, there is no past. There's only the present moment, and everything always happens in the present. And taking your words to heart, it reminds me that the present really has not really escaped anything. We are still living what was happened in the present, which happened to Turtle Island at the beginning, during the occupation, to this current day. And all around the world, we're still in the present moment, and oppression, and the way I see it, and I've said this many times, I think it's really important. There's only two things, actually three things, and there's light and dark, and then third thing is the present moment. And I've come to the realization that light will never compromise itself, dark will never compromise itself. Therefore, they came up with the third concept so they could coexist. And the third thing, which is the present moment, is where light and dark get to battle out, as Arjuna points out in the Bhagavad Gita, that when we have to deal with light and dark, the present moment is where we find the coalescence of these two extreme opposites. And yet the present represents the coexistence of those opposites. And when we have these flows and ebbs, just like the ocean, when I see the waves coming up on the beach and then they recede and they come back onto the beach and they recede, that seems to be the nature of the present moment. And culturally, that seems to be our predicate that we deal with.
Well, I don't believe that light and dark are in battle with one another. I think this is where, you know, we tend to create adversarial relationships because there's this tendency for polarization. And so I see it as a dance. Light and dark are in a dance with one another, right? We have the night, we have the day. And there's actually a smooth coalescence between the two of them. And so I really invite you and everyone that is in the Western world to kind of see it in a different sort of way. It's kind of like the same notion of Darwinian evolution, the struggle of the fittest, you know, the survival of the fittest, and competition tends to be the name of the game. And that's really not how the natural world operates. So we have to see the way that our inculcation through conditioning in the Western educational paradigm sets up this notion of conflict and polarization. And I think that's really the key, that we have to move away from the rhetoric of fighting and conflict. It was the same thing during the pandemic. You know, we need to, you know, kill, and we're at war with this virus. And that's just, it's not the way that I or a lot of Indigenous people were perceiving it, right? And so we have within our nature this tendency in the Western colonized world to have conflict, you know, war on drugs, the war on people right now. And I mean, it just seems to be rife in our society. And so there's another way of being in the world, which is really predicated on peace, you know, on trying to find, rather than division and seeing the person as the other, as an adversary, but as family, right? So in the Lakota, we have the word mitakwe oyasin. It's a phrase that says, all my relations, we're all family here, and we need to find ways to work things out. I mean, there is enough space on this planet for everyone to exist. And again, you know, the creation of these arbitrary borders when, you know, they're saying, well, we need to get these foreigners out of here. Well, the fact is that everybody here, unless you were born as an Indigenous person on this land, is a visitor. And so, you know, this country has essentially been populated based upon migration and migrants, you know. And so it's ironic when you have these white supremacists talking about removing foreigners when they were the original foreigners here, right? So we have to, you know, see a much deeper story.
Oh, Philip.
Playing itself out.
Yeah, Philip, I don't disagree at all with what you said. However, the predicate, again, I have to point out very clearly, is that we're living in a culture that sees what's happening as a war. So I'm not denying what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying, but I, too, represent this wild kind of unmisguided culture that I live in and that I'm a part of. And so what I'm telling you is that they see light and dark not as the sunrise and sunset. They see it as a war, whether we like it or not. That is their cultural paradigm, which controls the populace. That's what government does. That's what these politicians are doing. They're trying to control, they say, for the peace of the community, which is, for the most part, a lot of administrations do that. But we're currently in an extreme administration, like Hitler, like Mussolini, like Napoleon. I mean, we've had these dictators before. This is nothing new. And this keeps arising. Now, whether we like it or not, this is a very repeating pattern throughout history. Now, it can change, I agree, but I do see that whether we like it or not, yes, I think consciousness is pure light. I see the world as pure light. But as I said, the present moment where we have the playing out of the warlike tendencies of the cultures that we're dealing with, whether we like it or not, that's how they perceive it. And that's the way it is. So we can see, like, your point of view, I agree with you. But I see my point of view is also relevant, whether we like it or not.
Well, to be clear, I'm not disputing the reality of the Western colonized mind polarize, right? So we, that's part of being a good hunter, right? It's, I don't know if you've ever hunted before, but
yes,
you have to track your prey,
right?
And so what we're doing is we're tracking the truth of what the behavior of this particular animal, which is in this case, its administration is, okay? And meaning we're looking at the patterns and the behaviors, which is also why it's important that, you know, you mentioned about really ultimately all we have is a present moment, which is true, but we do have a past. And the point is that we learn from our past, and that's what this country has not done, which is why we are revisiting in a profound way the, you know, the original reaction to what was occurring with the monarchy. Right. So essentially, the American Revolution was a response slash reaction to a king. Right. And if we don't learn from the blunders of our past, then we are doomed to repeat them. And that's essentially what's happening right now. More than, you know, in terms of historically what's occurring, we're talking about the pendulum swinging back really toward the brink of monarchy again. And so there's been this 250-year swath of a semblance of not a democracy, but a republic, right? That's really ultimately, it's not really a democracy. It was essentially set up as a republic. And so now we have the swing of the pendulum because all of the people that were in positions of leadership and responsibility didn't put certain things in place. Right. They didn't have foresight. You know, they weren't really thinking ahead. It's like, so now there's a person in a position of leadership in this country who is a criminal. Right. And so that wasn't like woven into the Constitution to say that it's against the Constitution for someone who is a felon to be able to hold office. They didn't have that foresight. And that's why we are exactly where we are now, is that the people in positions of leadership, you know, throughout for 250 years now have not done their job. And now they're playing catch up because they're seeing what's happening, because this so-called democracy and the republic is essentially crumbling because one of the particular parties has done a little bit of their homework to understand where the loopholes are in the system, right? And that's the problem, is that there was no shoring up of any sort of gaps or loopholes where people could find ways to manipulate the system. And that's what we have now. And if, you know, I want to have faith. I want to believe that there will be a, and I mean, for me, what's happening in Los Angeles is essentially a reflection of this. There are individuals who are standing up against suppression and oppression, right? And in one sense, the American populace is beginning to have a modicum of understanding of how indigenous peoples and what they've had to endure for over 500 plus years of suppression and oppression, you know, and, you know, it's the time of reckoning now. Okay. And so we are either all going to come together in solidarity and fight against this particular dictator, or they're going to the Republican Party is going to run rimshot over the American populace. I mean, the agenda, you know, if I could be completely frank, is really clear. We're talking about an attempt to eviscerate this country and to essentially kill people. Right. That's really what the agenda is, so that you create essentially a supremacy state. You know, the analogies between Nazism is clear, you know, and what was the agenda of that system, which was the extermination of people whom they found to be inferior. And so anyone that doesn't meet their criteria are going to be undermined and removed, you know, and exterminated. I mean, we're talking about the elimination of our healthcare systems, right? Which, you know, there are people that are relying upon that, you know, for their survival. And if these systems are removed from existence, then there's going to be people who are fully struggling. And so we're talking about a the perception of an elite race. I mean, the elimination of all DEI, right? So, you know, the acknowledgement of people throughout history, whether they be, you know, people of different genders or different ethnicities, not contributing to the history of this country is completely ridiculous and unconscionable. But that's what the agenda is. You know, to create a supremacy state that's just basically a whitewash, and of people who are financially well off. You know, the essentially this notion of elitism, financially. I mean, that's really where we're going, and there are people that are fighting against that. You know, and fortunately, the judicial system is also fighting back, and you know, prayerfully. You know, my prayer is that, you know, people have to understand, I mean, there's a certain swath of the population that do not want to become involved in politics. But the reality is politics is what drives government. And so it's important to understand that, you know, and people can get into their notions about the Electoral College, yada, yada, yada. But the point is that people have to use their voice, right? So within a year and a half or so, I mean, because this is just the beginning of this administration, right? And they're already, you know, doing so much damage. But within a year and a half, there's going to be another series of elections. And this is where the American populace can step up, use its voice to begin to change the dynamics of how the parties are expressing themselves, right? Meaning, you know, the House of Representatives and the Senate. Right now, there's a majority, a Republican majority, which is why they're able to push all of these programs through. Whereas if there's more opposition, that is, they've got, if the Democrats have a majority in the House and the Senate, then it's going to help to, it'll contribute to the impedance of whatever agenda this particular president has.
A couple of things. One, number one, I agree for the most part what everything you just said. However, I will disagree with you on this. This is more a philosophical position. There is no past. Sorry. There is no future. Sorry. The present moment is eternity from my perspective. And if we can't learn from the present, we'll certainly never learn from the past. The past can be used to justify the present moment. So you looking back to the past has not brought us to peace right now. Okay. The past has been used. And people like Trump have used the past, like Hitler, to predicate the problem that he's perpetrating in the present. So I respectfully disagree about your concept that there still is the past. No, I disagree. It's still happening in the present. And until we correct the present, then the present will be peaceful. But we still don't have peace anywhere, like pervasively on this planet, where it's going to have to be, in my opinion. Now, on the other hand, I agree with you. And there, whether we like it or not, I see the battle has been always in the present until we can come to some kind of reconciliation about what language does. The problem with language, it really doesn't describe anything. I studied theater for years, and one of the first things they taught us that language is so lacking, so as wonderful and beautiful as it can be, it also doesn't really speak to the issue. There's what they call the underlining meaning. When we speak, there's an underlining meaning that is really the truth of what we're trying to convey. And so in this regard, I think the present moment has to be understood that this is where it has to happen. If we can't bring peace now, it will never be in the future. It'll never be in the past because they don't exist. And so in that regard, philosophically, I will disagree with you. The past, in my point, yes, you can learn from your pretense of what you thought happened. But again, the past is like a belief system. You believe that happened because they told you that happened, but you weren't there. You don't know what really happened. That's a belief system. And I don't like belief because it means I wish it were so. I prefer the word faith because then you're going to do something regardless of the past or the future because you know in your heart and your spirit it has to be so. And that's why I'm really very adamant about this, that the present moment is all there is. It's not that I'm angry. I just want to make my point very intensely because that's my experience and that's all I can convey. So respectfully, there is no past, there is no future, and let's take care of the present because then we don't have to justify the past as a way to predicate the violence that we're experiencing in the present.
Well, you and I and everyone that's listening has an umbilical cord. And the umbilical cord indicates that there is a past, right? But what I'm trying to say is that, you know, each and every one of us was born and have had a story, right? And that story is a part of our past. And, you know, we
which is in the present. Well, but you are a representation of that now, now.
But you're missing my point.
And you're missing my point, but go ahead.
So we are conditioned animals. And as a consequence of that conditioning, right, there's going to be certain behaviors that manifest. And, you know, being in the present moment also means being able to track the past. And that is our personal history. So that we learn, right? So, you know, I do a lot of work with people who are in addiction recovery. Right. And there were certain patterns that they displayed and maybe even precipitated their immersion and their indulgence in an addiction. Right. Now, if they stay only in the present moment and they don't learn from their past, then they may continue to have an addiction. Whereas tracking one's past and the patterns you've made and the choices that each person, you know, makes that that dictates their future actions, right, will determine whether or not they heal, right? So if people are only riveted in the moment and they don't really have the foresight and the hindsight to reflect upon where they're going, and by learning from the blunders that perhaps they engaged in the past, then that's why we have the same issues that we have today.
Okay, but hold on, right? hold on. You make a point. I don't want just a lecture here. Let me point out something. You can talk about the past and the future and all of that, but again, my point to you is that the present moment is how you overcome an addiction, not by reminding yourself about the past or thinking of what you want in the future. The present moment is how you overcome an addiction. I overcame the addiction of marijuana, not because of my past, but because my present moment, when I stopped doing something, I started to see the realization in the present moment of the value of not smoking any longer. So that I'm going to really be down on this, because I don't want to just have lectures back and forth. And the beauty about both of us is we are staunchly present. We know what we know, and we have to convey it. You do it your way, I do it my way. I'm always accused of being angry. I am not an angry person. I'm a very intense individual, and that's my nature, and people misunderstand me, but I don't care, because I have to do and say what I do the way I do it. But I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's just we're taking a different path to the same teepee.
Well, that's fine. I mean, we can, you know, respectfully agree to disagree.
Exactly.
I do believe, you know, as I said, the reality is that, you know, I also have access to information. You know, we have visions, which where the Tunkashalas, the spirits, show us the future, right? And so, you know, I do believe there is a future, you know, and how the choices that we make. I mean, it's also about karma. Right. So, and karma, not in the New Age sense of karma, but in the more Buddhist orientation, which is that each choice that we make in the moment has a manifold possibility of manifestation in the future.
Which is right? The present.
No.
No. What do you mean, no? KNOW? No, it's right now.
So, the spirits show us futures, right? That's what prophecy is all about. Right.
Which happens in the present. Prophecies, please admit that prophecies happen in the present.
No, prophecy is the future.
It's recognized in the present, Philip. Come on. It's recognized in the present.
It's received in the present.
Thank you. That's what I'm trying to say here.
It's received in the present, but it represents a future possibility.
It's the seed of the present that's going to flower in the present.
But it's going to happen in the future.
Which happens in the present.
We're going to have to agree to disagree.
Thank you. That's my point, that we can, let's, my problem with language it obfuscates the obvious, which is the present moment, and that we use these languages of future and past to justify our opinion. That's why I don't like the word believe, because it means I wish it were so. No, things are or they're not. There's no wishing involved.
Well, belief is not necessarily connected to wishing.
Sure. You look it up in the dictionary, it says, I think it's true. It doesn't mean it's true.
Well, believing and thinking are two different things.
But the definition of belief is, I think something is going to be true, therefore I believe it. That's what they say in the dictionary. You got to use language for what it says.
Well, there's a difference between denotation and connotation.
I agree.
So each person's perception of language is different. That's their connotation of it. But I've never read in the dictionary that belief is connected to thought.
Look it up. Right? Belief, it's right there. Look it
belief
up.
Is about, well, belief is about faith, and faith is in the heart in my tradition, right? So it's not connected to thinking at all, actually. Faith transcends thinking.
Yeah, but then the definitions are misleading them, because if you read, look it up. You can see in the dictionary, it says belief means I think something is true. That's what it says. I don't know why you can't acknowledge it. That's what it says.
Which dictionary?
Any dictionary. Look it up. Seriously, any dictionary. They think is a part of a belief system. So
in our next conversation, I'm going to hold you to task. Please. Here. I will look in the dictionary and see if belief is connected to thinking, even in the denotation.
I was studying the Oxford Dictionary back in college, and I spent a lot of time looking up words. But as an actor, that was my job, was to look up the definition of language. And people use language like dog doo-doo. They have most of the time, they don't know half of what they're saying. Now, I'm not talking about you, but most people don't know what language represents. They use their energy and their emotions to describe what using words, but they use their emotions to try to describe something. And that's why people misunderstand me, because they see me as angry. I'm not angry. I'm just a very intense individual, because I'm sick and tired of the stupidity that I encounter on a regular basis all over this country. And that's what bothers me. And I'm not angry. I'm just very frustrated that these people don't understand that. If you are going to be a Christian, for God's sakes, what are you talking about? Either love each other and the world, or don't. But don't be predicating yourself that, oh, Trump is the best thing that God ever gave us. What are you, nuts?
Well, everyone's relationship to language is different, you know, and I definitely agree. For me, you know, language is energy. And so it's important for people to have precision, you know, with how they articulate themselves and how they convey that information from their minds, you know, using the limitations of language, which is what we have as the means for us to communicate. And so the more precise people are with their language, the more there's the possibility for understanding. And, you know, peace and reconciliation first come within oneself. Right. So, I find you to be a passionate individual, Mercury. You know, so I don't see your declarations as angry, but rather as an expression of your passion and your intensity, which is a beautiful thing. You know, I really celebrate that about you.
And I love you for that, because you're very one of the few people that has honestly can say that to me, and one of the few has ever said that to me. And that's why we've been spending over 5 years talking to one another for every month for 5 years. That's very rare that anybody does that with anybody. And so I have come to respect you tremendously. And that's why I'm finally releasing what I know to be true for me. And I'm now coming out of my shell, so to speak. And I have to speak my truth as you speak your truth. And that's why God brought both of us together. The white spirit, the dark spirit, the light spirit, we're all here to convey to the world that we need to get together, and love and forgiveness is the foundation of what we're living. If we can bring that to the forefront and teach somebody, anybody, to preach, appreciate the beauty of what a little baby teaches us. That surrendering of love and forgiveness is what a baby receives and gives all at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, for me, that's within each and every one of us, but oftentimes it becomes eclipsed, you know, by fear. And so therefore, for us to have peace in this world, it starts from within. You know, we need to find peace within ourselves, the forgiveness, the healing that you're referring to. You know, if all of the wars that are happening, all the conflict are just a reflection of the internalized warfare we continue to wage. And so when we can accept ourselves fundamentally, love ourselves unconditionally, forgive ourselves for even our own blunders in our lives, then we can have the possibility for peace.
We actually went on and had a further discussion about what we were involved with in this wonderful conversation that we had. So please stay tuned. You're listening to the Center of the Universe. Chief Black Course will be finishing up this conversation that we started on the other side of our moment that's coming up here. Stay tuned. This is a wonderful time for us to be living and learning about how we can come together. And you are listening to the Center of the Universe.